We are going to delve into a number of the policies that you are putting forward. I know we've spoken before on the small business department within government, and I know we're going to have a pretty heated conversation on that. But before we move off the government of national unity, is there anything else that you want to say, and perhaps you need to ask yourself the question that you want to answer?
Well, I think the GNU in the first few months was a puzzling beast. But speaking for myself, I struggled to get on top of what are even the right questions. I'm a lot clearer on some of the issues and some answers, I think, and questions now. I think the budget debacle in February was very important. It was the first time the ANC were hit on the head and told by reality that they no longer are a 50% party. That's very important because up until then, the president was, in my view, having a great time. He was president of the country. He was calling all the shots. He was going all over the world. And nothing much else was happening, but he was seemed to be in charge. And suddenly the reality of a coalition government came into operation. That's the first thing. The second is I'm in the business of reform, if you like, a reform monger, as some people would call it. And we think very long and hard about how do you influence people with power. What are the levers to get the GNU to do what South Africa needs? And this, because I think its formation doesn't get you very far. It's better than the alternative, but that's not helping. And in the meanwhile, things are getting worse, not better. I know for financial people, yes, the markets are better. Yes, with the, you know, the rand's holding up and so on. Don't be fooled. This can change overnight. And the ANC has very foolishly got into Trump's spotlight and they're poking the bear and we could pay severely for this. So I think that the real opportunity of the GNU is how do the DA, I'm going to use them, not talk about the small other parties because they're very small indeed. How does the DA and how does business and how does the rest of society up the pressure on the GNU to deliver? And so that's where my head is. And what we have to do, and we said this on the budget, our statement on the budget gave a full menu of where you could cut without affecting the lives of South Africans as a whole in a negative way. One of the things we said was you have to couple support for the budget with what we call, whatever you want to call it, a growth compact. I'm sick of hearing everyone talk about growth or inclusive growth. I want some action to actually change the dynamics in the country to get growth. And I don't think we're there. I think the DA is struggling and it's a difficult task, but we could get into that. I prefer not to talk party politics. I have strong opinions, but I run a non-party political organization. But I certainly have strong views on business. And I differ from Adrian Gore. And I think we need, there are some very tough issues facing organized business and business leaders 9 months into the GNU.
So let's unpack those issues as you see them. Start with the most pressing one.
Well, can I change it around, if you don't mind? Let me
tell the audience. I've given you that license, yeah.
If I can tell you a little bit about what CDE's been working on for the last 9 months. That will give you a framework, and then we can come to business or anything else that you'd like to talk about, because I think it gives you a feeling of what I mean and what we think of as reform. So in January 2024, we set ourselves a task. We said, let's bet on the positive. Let's hope we get a better government. We didn't know what it would be. And then let's say, okay, what do you do first? What are the priorities for a reforming government? Which is hard. The country is in crisis in every sphere you think of, from catastrophic unemployment to appalling education to healthcare to infrastructure to the cities, except this Cape Town or this town, which is fabulous. You know, so we're surrounded by trouble, which is getting worse and worse. So the first question you have to ask yourself is, what are our priorities if you were the government? What would we advise them to do first? And we ended up saying, you can't do everything, which we know. You have to have a few priorities, and you've got to send some big and bold signals that there's a new sheriff in town, whatever language you want to use. There's a new direction for South Africa. And we came up with five themes. The fiscal crisis, the state of our state, the rule of law, how a weak state enables the private sector to do as much as they possibly can because the state is pretty incompetent. And a fifth one. Oh, the fifth, very important, inclusion. We've, unlike most people, we've tried to define what inclusion would mean and how you really deal with poverty. So those were our five themes. And we said, okay, well, pick two catalysts in each one. And I want to just emphasize where we started, because there was a reason. We'd worked a lot with Professor Ricardo Hausmann from Harvard University, who we found resources for him to work on South Africa over the last 3 years. And building on what he was saying and what we had worked on with him, you have to acknowledge something that is very hard. South Africa's state is weak. And what that means is that your next sentence cannot be, the state is weak. I really want the state to do this, that, and the next thing. It's incoherent. They're not able to do this. And it's hard for us. It's hard for all of us. But that's where you have to start the conversation. So we said our first report, which we issued in June, as the government was being formed, we said, you have to fix the state. Here is how. Here's how to do some quick things that will build the foundations for a longer term program. You have to cut the cabinet. Why? Because a cabinet that is as big as ours, 32 ministers and about 38 deputy ministers. Well, imagine trying to get a conversation with 32 ministers, forget the deputy ministers, and say, we're all going to agree on 1, 2, and 3. Well, most businesses don't have a big executive for a reason. Javier Milei in Argentina, who has remarkably surprised the world in less than 2 years by bringing down inflation, by getting growth, by cutting the state, he slashed his cabinet from 18 to 8. And according to his Minister of Deregulation and Transformation, this makes it easy. There are 8 of us in the room. We can take decisions and so on. So our very first thing we said was, cuts the cabinet and a whole lot of other things.
So Anne, I want to pause there for a moment, because I don't think that is new, right? I think there's every economist, every market commentator that you listen to the radio. I was listening to SAFM, Ashraf Garda. The call is for cutting the cabinet, right? As you say, 32 ministers and 28 deputy ministers. But the reality is that even though that is the advice, there is no implementation. So I think everybody's calling for the same thing. And I know you're going to move through your priority list.
Yes.
But I mean, they're not budging, right? There wasn't one cut on any minister.
We got more ministers than we had before. What I think we're saying that's different is not just the cost, which is important, but if you're talking billions, this is millions. But if you want to reform, you need a small, tight group who agree. And that's what's different. So that's number one. The second issue, which we didn't win either, is that we did once win some other things in terms of the efficiency of the cabinet and how it operates. I think there is some progress there. But at the moment, the cabinet doesn't really operate. The government doesn't work. The cabinet, not me, Trevor Manuel, the cabinet doesn't really function. The second thing we said was, pick your mission critical jobs. Let's call it 120 for argument's sake. We identified those and said the very first step of reform is to make sure you have the best people possible running your big SOEs, running your big departments, because if you don't have that, you have the wrong person there who doesn't understand money, who doesn't understand performance. They appoint people who are just like them. You're never going to get anywhere. So that was a very important suggestion we were making. The DA tried rather, I would have worded it differently than they did, but they gave up on this issue. And it's vital. So let me come to Mr. Gore's excellent talk today. I have some real problems with the business-government relationship. He said today, we're interested only in execution. The problem is, if you have the wrong people in position, Transnet, the board, the executive, all their arms, running the ports, you're not going to make progress. And if you dig deeper in this, what is a corporatist relationship behind the scenes that we don't really know what is going on? If you dig deeper, yes, everybody claims ownership of the energy, you know, private production of energy. Fabulous. Civil servants claim it, business claims. Wonderful. We got it. That matters. We've got very little except a new document in December last year on logistics. And, you know, to this day, Cape Town Port, pretty important for the citrus industry and a whole lot of other things, is the worst in the world, and nobody's talking about it, least of all Transnet or Portnet or whoever it is in the empire. So if you're interested in execution and you're not going to talk about policy and you're not going to talk about people, I think you get stuck. And they will tell you that results in the second work stream on logistics are slow, or whatever euphemism they use. They're even slower in crime and corruption. So there's a whole lot to interrogate in terms of how, with the possibilities of a GNU, what is the right, the most effective way in which business leaders and business organizations can operate. Don't forget, what is really happening is that the most important executives in the country have had to stop running their businesses and spend time helping the government to run South Africa. This is not something to boast about. I think this is as big a mark of failure as boasting that we have 28 million people on public grants, which the president loves to do. So,
I think that's a very important point, because business does boast 100% to a man, and I say man because there's very few women executives there, that this collaborative work with the government, where they're solving small business and they are solving the infrastructure crisis and the employment crisis. That's a very nice way to look at it, and I'm going to challenge a number of business leaders going forward on that. But I do want to bring us to the small business, because I think that is an ecosystem of what you are suggesting can change. And I think they're very tangible aspects. It takes us back to the conversation that we had, right? You have had an external party do research on the small business environment, and there is around 6 billion rand, correct me if I'm wrong, that is being spent on an annual basis over the last 3 years. That's 18 billion rand over the last 3 years, aimed at enabling small businesses with no measurability. There is no track record. There is, and correct me again if I'm wrong, but when you spoke about it, it's about the growth momentum, right? If you're a business, it's about looking at the revenue and not necessarily the profitability. So they are saying XXX 100 agri-businesses were helped. But as you put it very eloquently in our conversation, it's not about, well, did that business grow from a small business to a slightly bigger business to ultimately the ability to contribute to the economy and to growth? Your view was cut the small business department with immediate effect, hand it over to the private sector, this 18 billion, or at least give them 9 billion, right? And then see what the private sector can do for small business. Have I played that back to you correctly?
Very well. Let me just add one nuance. So we have a small business department since 2014, and we cannot see the impact that they're having. The money that is being spent, the 6 billion a year, which we think is an underestimate to help small business, is throughout government. It's not through the small business department. So that's the one which makes it slightly harder. But we cannot find any indication of how 6 billion a year is helping the country. This is a lot of money, which all the businessmen in the room would tell me. This is not insignificant money. So, you know, the more you thought about it, you think, well, what makes anyone think that an official who's never run a business, who probably through no fault of their own has no exposure to business, why are they going to be good people to help other people run their business? This is crazy. What we should do, and it's not an easy task to get a dynamic and innovative small business sector, we should give it to the experts in our society. Let's see if they can do a better job. There are people here who've helped small businesses. But if you said, let's take half the money they have, over 3 years, 9 billion, and in a competitive way, say to the private sector, here are the rules. It's got to be to help small businesses. It's got to be transparent. You've got to account for the money. We're interested in, you can make it up, we're interested in employment. We're interested in innovation. Every year, if you get this sum of this money, you're going to account to the country through Parliament, what did I do with it? So a sort of public competition to 3 or 5 money managers, banks, investment houses, venture capitalists, whatever, you do it publicly and you say, we're going to run an experiment. Let's see if you can do a better job. And then once a year, you could say, come and account. What were the problems? What are the difficulties? What are the regulations that are holding back the businesses you're helping? How much employment? And then we could also say to the public entities, there are 28 financing entities and there are 300 other entities that help small business. We could say to them, you can also come and account for the money that you've spent. Let's see who can do a better job for the country's growth.
Is it not, though, circumventing the inadequate government? Again, we're saying it's not appropriate to boast about the fact that government has to step in and assist. I mean, that private sector has to step in and assist government, right? And now we're saying, well, actually now, let's just get the private sector to do what government should be doing. Isn't there a way that reform, as you speak about it, could happen where we rework the small business department with executives, hiring executives, and even if it is retired executives who have run small businesses to get that progress going?
Well, let's step back. I would have a different view. I think you have to think very hard about what is the role of the state and what are the role is the role of markets. Now, I think this is a perfect example where the last thing you want is a small business department in South Africa. You want, we said, let's, you know, whatever they do, put it into trade and industry and let the privates, this is a perfect thing the private sector should be better at. It's what they do. So let's use the private sector skills, markets, capacities, et cetera, properly. So firstly, what South Africans don't debate very clearly is in a country like this, and I don't have a ideological point of view. There are some people we've been listening to who do. I think you've got to say, gee, in the transport sector, what is the best role for the market or the state? And you could say, at this time, it should be this, this, and this. And it might change in time. But, and it'll be different from, say, the health sector or agriculture or whatever. And that's what's interesting about Argentina. They are ideological. He is in the president is a one of a kind. He describes himself as an anarcho-capitalist. And they're openly libertarian, but not in some stereotypical way. They believe in social welfare. In fact, they've increased the benefits to the poor. They just cut out the middleman. They said it's going to go straight into your bank account, and all those middlemen agencies are going to lose their cut here. That seems like a great idea to me. So I think one's got to get a more, if you start with this particular state is pretty useless, not all of it, but a lot of it, what do we do for the next 10, 15 years? It might be different in 15, 20 years' time, but stop beating your head against the wall and pretending we've got a really competent state that can pick winners, winning sectors in our economy when they can barely read a balance sheet. Yeah.
So what is working? Is there anything that is working in your view?
We have a world-class reserve bank. We have a rapidly improving revenue collector, which the middle classes in other developing countries wouldn't be so happy about this, but we're all happy that something works and they're collecting tax and are back giving them more money to see if they can deliver more tax from tax evaders. We have a good treasury. I think the budget debacle is a topic we'll talk about in the next session, but I am worried about the consequences of this. But we have a pretty impressive treasury, world-class treasury. I imagine there are pockets elsewhere that I don't know about. I went to the Alexandra Health Clinic to get my COVID vaccine as a VIT student. We had sent money from to help build that clinic, and it was fabulous. And a lot of people went to the Hillbrow Hospital, public hospital. They said it was great. So there are pockets of excellence remaining. But overall, we have a very weak state. A lot of our provinces are terrible. And as we know, a lot of our local authorities, the majority, are failing to perform the very basic functions of a local authority.
What are some of the other solutions that you're tabling? So we've spoken about the small business department.
Great.
Take me there.
Let me tell you about one other, which I think is interesting, and it raises questions for discussion about the role of business. So if you want an economy, a lot of people say to us, why don't you just give us a growth strategy? Hard thing to do. And we wanted to. But you can't, because if you don't have the rule of law, if you don't have an effective state, if you don't have a whole lot of things, you can't actually expect growth. So we took a step back and said, okay, the rule of law is one of the big issues. We have, after all, suffered from massive elite looting of the state. what could we do about this? So the one issue we looked at was how we appoint judges, because the quality of the judges we're appointing is in decline, according to the legal profession. And I won't go into this much other than to say that because of the way the Judicial Services Commission has operated, we have for the last 3 years not had sufficient people putting themselves up to be interviewed as candidates for the Constitutional Court. Think about that for a moment. You have to give the president, I think it's 3 or 4 nominations to get one, for him to choose one. So we don't have that. Okay, so we thought judges really matter. That's important. So we brought out a report on that. The second report we did was on the National Prosecuting Authority. Now, you'd think after billions of our tax money was spent on the Zondo Commission, that it wouldn't be all that hard to get some of the big state capture crooks charged effectively and successfully prosecuted. To this day, we do not have a big fish who has been successfully prosecuted. Why, you ask yourself? So we did this report, we did this work, we were advised by some of the leading judges and lawyers and former judges in the country, and we brought out a report. And the essence of what we said was this. One, there's lots of talk about the NPA and we don't really know. There's this allegation and that one. What we need is a retired judge to look at the NPA and, in the same way as Bob Nugent did for SARS, tell us what's going on. What's the problem here? Is it performance? Is it leadership? Is it structure? Is it still captured? What is going on? Write this report as quickly as possible in a serious, from a retired judge of quality, and then tell the country and the president what to do. That would be one. So that was our first recommendation. Our second recommendations, there were a few others. We want corruption courts like we had during the Soccer World Cup. We had special criminal courts that would operate very effectively. The lawyers advising us and many other people said, well, we could do the same with corruption. So you deal with things quickly and you send a big message to society that we just shifted the balance of you can't get away with it that easily, and that would help. Anyhow, so that's one set of recommendations. The other, we discovered to my shock, because it wasn't talked about publicly, we discovered two things. One, the Ministry of Justice does not allow the National Prosecuting Authority full access to the archives of the Zondo Commission. What? What is going on? Second thing, the way the law works is that the head of the NPA has to investigate somebody who's shouldn't be in their job, and then has to recommend to the president that this person be suspended. In August 2023, the head of the NPA said to the president of the country, please suspend this person. Not some minor functionary, the regional director in Johannesburg. She has yet to get a reply. So then you say, well, does the NPA get enough support from the executive? Clearly not. So when the deputy president stands up and tells us that we've really got to deal with corruption, besides the personal allegations that have been made against him, about which I, have to be tested in a court of law, I want to stand up and say, here are two examples about the state's commitment to dealing with corruption. Now, if you take it further to business, business has a working group on crime and corruption, rightly. And they're working very hard, and they are working with the NPA to fund the sort of expertise the country needs on financial crime. You've got to follow the money, as everybody knows, and the state doesn't have that capacity. Great. And then you say, but if the NPA itself isn't working very well, and if the president who you are working with isn't giving them access to the Zondo Commission or helping to rid the NPA of somebody the head of the NPA wants suspended, what is going on here? How would the lots of money that business is going to spend on this, what is it called, forensic unit, going to actually help if the NPA itself isn't working properly? So I think there's some big questions, difficult questions, that we all have to wrestle with as we try and get the GNU to deliver on its potential.
Are there questions from the room? Yes, if we can get a microphone up to the back there. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne, for your time. I would just like to know, how would the ANC and DA resolve disputes in the GNU and understand there is a clearinghouse? It seems like it's not working because recently the ANC has published its budget, but unfortunately it doesn't have support from its GNU's members. And then going forward, how do you get the DA and the ANC to agree and work together on things that you mentioned, like growing the economy? Because the trend, from what it seems like since the ANC was elected again into power, is that they are going to double down on their bad policies, and are they're unlikely to pivot from their current trajectory. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm signaling. Ignore me. Okay. I look crazy now. I'm just signaling for Mike to come down here afterwards and there. Great. Thank you.
Well, those are two big, great questions. I don't want to get too deep into politics in my official capacity. Clearly, relationships, well, there are a lot of things we could talk about. The GNU needs to find a way of working together where you cannot perpetuate the policies of the sixth administration, holus bolus, which is sort of what the ANC's been hoping they could do. That's why all these bills have come up, which were passed in Parliament before the election last year. So let me put it this way. I am strongly in favor of having a common diagnosis of why South Africa is in the terrible situation we're in. Because, as you know, if you don't have a common diagnosis or the right diagnosis, how do you move forward? So the president has yet to tell the country in his 6 years of being president, why do we not have growth? Why is everything falling apart? Why does the deputy president tell us, oh, we're going to fix this and fix that? Why? Why did you break it in the first place? So we as a society, we don't have a common diagnosis, which would be hard. I understand that. And in a perfect world, you would want that to have been agreed, if not before negotiating the coalition government, where our constitution failed us because we only had 2 weeks, but certainly immediately after. So we don't have a common view on, sure, it's this, this, and this. That's why we're in such a mess. And then how do you move forward? So I think that really is an obstacle. Now, what mechanisms the GNU has, I'm not an expert on that, but certainly you have to have ongoing relationships between the key parties. I'm not sure those are as strong as they need to be for what the country needs. But most important, you need an agreed program of action. Now, the president, we didn't get that before the two-week negotiation. And I think the DA went in on hope that a piece of paper meant the same to them as it did to the ANC. I'm not sure it does. We're told that the GNU has agreed on the medium-term development plan. I happen to have seen drafts of this before, and this is not going to help us. It's business as usual. So I think we're asking a lot of the DA. Let me just sort of put it this way. You have to be good ministers, in the effective ministers in the cabinet. You have to have an across-cabinet sort of strategy, of which the budget is the beginnings of that, I hope. And then you've got to lead your party, and you have to have your own narrative. The narrative of the GNU up till now is Cyril's. And that's very hard. So Nick Clegg, who went in with the Conservatives in Britain, is used as an example of what not to do. The Liberal Democrats went in with a much bigger Conservative Party, and I think they were the good guys, and they were wiped out in the next election. They didn't develop their own narrative of what they were doing and how they were going to differentiate themselves. So this is hard, but I think that's what's got to happen. And we're going to have to, so the mechanism for dispute resolution is,
and just hold
euphemism,
your...
is a euphemism for a much bigger set of issues.
So, and while we're doing that, I just want to also pass the mic. I'm conscious of time. Trevor, sorry, I know there was a lady who wanted to speak. There we go. And then I know Peter Major wants to speak here. So, and there's another gentleman there, Mr. Atkin, who wants to speak to him. Yeah. All right. So we'll take a couple of these.
Is it off?
Do you want to go ahead and ask your question as well?
Just an observation. What frightens me about certainly the budget outcome is this seeming reluctance to look at the spending side of things. Being a small business owner, and that just knowing that if you can't manage your company, cut your cloth, accordingly, and so on. If we have a GNU where there's no pressure on anyone to review spending habits, I mean, having worked with government in the tourism industry in a provincial environment, I think one of the problems is that most of the officials that you work with have actually never earned a cent in their life. In other words, they only know how to spend, they don't know how to earn. So, I mean, we face this huge problem of a lack of spending analysis and the possibility. How do we change that psyche?
So you can answer those two, and then I'm going to move the mic to the other side of the room. So you go ahead.
I don't know what happens if the GNU disappoints us all. At some point, look, the parties are, one of the speakers said this very dramatically, but the parties, the two main parties, are competitors for electoral votes, and they have to stay close to their own electorates and assess what they can and can't do. So staying close to your electorate is going to be very important. And I mean, if we're in the same position we are in now, without any, everyone says the same thing. We've made some progress on visas through Leon Schreiber and the Home Affairs. Great. But we got 0.6% growth last year. This is disastrous when you have a population growth rate that's double, nearly triple that. So I think if there isn't significant movement, it gets harder and harder for parties to justify being part of this. But I don't know. I'm wrestling with that. We've got to make sure it's not that situation. But this is hard. This potential is not good enough. The country's slipping further and further down. In answer to the other question, I am going to talk about that in the budget panel, but let me just say very briefly, I think our analysis, and we're still doing it, is that this is a very bad budget. We've moved, most people are comparing yesterday's budget to the February budget. The more interesting comparison is to the medium-term budget policy statement last October. And we've moved from last October saying we're going to deal with the deficit and debt, which is enormous and growing, through cutting expenditure. Yesterday's budget is we're going to deal with the debt through raising taxes. There is, you know, they've talked about there will be a spending review. Oh, says the minister, we've done hundreds of these. Well, what happened? Nothing. Now there's going to be some kind of very vague something between the presidency and the minister, which I see Carol Payton today, who I respect enormously, had a very different interpretation from ours. She said, oh, this is great, big victory. No, what the DA wanted and what we wanted was a small cabinet committee tasked to find, take your number, we said 40 billion, find 40 billion in cuts and do it in 3 months. That's very different from, well, you know, we've done it all already. And the problem is that the president is missing in action. The budget minister has to have a budget, you know, for the next year. The president has to make policy decisions. Our proposals are for the situation we were in. We said, here's a menu of cuts you can make today. Why do civil servants get an above inflation wage increase this year? If you cut that and you, in the next 2 years of the medium-term expenditure framework, let them, their wages will rise with CPI, we could find a hundred billion rand in the 3 year period. Second advice, we said, look at procurement, which is something like 12% of the budget. It's massive how much money the government spends on procurement. Well, it's put in the budget. I think it's the same. It was in February, but let's assume it's the same. 5.4% per annum increase. We said, well, make that 3.5 and make the policy decision to get rid of localization and other set-asides. This pushes prices up. Eskom had to get an exemption from localization and other things in order to deal with load shedding so that they could go to the original equipment manufacturers, cut out the middlemen, reduce the price. Well, that experiment worked. Let's apply it to the whole country. So we had very specific cuts. These are not decisions the Minister of Finance can make on his own. He has to have a president ready to make big policy decisions. And there are others. The CETAs, 80 billion over 3 years, cut them.
There's been a lot of talk on the CETAs.
I haven't met anyone who likes them or their performance.
And I'm conscious that I want to get you onto that budget panel, right? But I want to take Peter Major's question, and I also want to take Tim Atkins' question. So Peter, go ahead, sir.
Hi, Anne. Hi. Unlike you, I'm always looking, where's a couple quick kills we can get here to change things? So I'm on the mining side, and tinkering's not going to work because the damage has been too big.
Yeah.
They nuked mining. So I always want to see an example. I don't want to be the guinea pig, but if we look at north of us, Zambia, Zaire, they just...
Peter, speak into the microphone.
Okay. They just threw out failed mining policy of 25 years. Yeah. They threw out the whole book. They wrote a couple pages. They said, guys, come in. No taxes for 5 years. Bring in, import what you want, hire who you want. And we saw it. We saw in 2003, 4, 5, 6, tens of billions went there. So, but what worries me is this MBR DA is so embedded with, they nationalized the mines and they've done BE, which the other countries didn't. So it's like my partner in Idaho, he's got a brain tumor. He went in for operation and they said, the tumor is too embedded in your brain. We thought it was just two arteries. It's 7 or 8. So you're going to have to live with the tumor. We take it out, you're dead. So Is our MPRDA too embedded? Will we be dead if we threw the whole thing out? And then real quick, our Chinese partners said China's corruption, Peter, was much worse than yours is here in the 70s and 80s. Everybody was a gangster. It was blatant. But we've implemented a special court for anybody in government, and they put away 10, 12,000 people every year. So aren't those two examples? They're dramatic.
Execute a few. I'm in favor of that.
I just want to get that mic back there. Thank you.
So, can we fix South Africa, which is the title of this? Can the GNU deliver? Absolutely. Take mining. You get rid of the minister. You get some excellent officials at the top. You deal with some corruption. Very quickly, you could change the whole environment. As you know, business has offered all sorts of things. But, you know, we continue to play games here. Corruption. We're not serious about dealing with corruption. So you have to come back to politics. The people who've caused the mess are part of the mess, and they need to go to jail or be removed politically. But so, which also brings me back to business. When last did you hear a mining person in South Africa say something publicly on what to do? Very quiet. Why?
Tim?
And thank you for your insights, being very interesting. Just to recap, a lot of the things that I think you've been talking about is, in fact, the sort of committee to work with the GNU. Is there no way the people voted this GNU into power effectively? It's not operating as that. It's operating exclusively, as I see it, from an ANC perspective. Can they not all work together to come to agreement for the good of this country in some form or another of restructuring the GNU to be more effective?
Well, I'm pleased you raised this issue, Tim. Everybody goes around saying the people voted for the GNU, we must work together. I don't think the people voted like that at all. The people in their great wisdom decided to vote for lots of small parties, not vote for the ANC in large numbers, you know, whatever. I don't think they had any thought of how this would end up. They did not vote for a coalition. I disagree with that perspective. Landed in. We've now landed. It's got nothing to do with what the voters, you know, they put us in this situation. But we're now in this situation. Well, this is what I spend my nights worrying about. Where are the levers to try and push the GNU to be effective? It's hard. It has to do with leadership. It has to do with some courage. It has to do with some vision. Now, if I don't think business, organized business, has a growth strategy. They're dealing with three things or trying to. If you read the document that Adrian spoke about today, I asked myself in the middle of 2022, why does business have to say we're the patriots here? They didn't steal the money. A very strange approach, in my view. So I think the two big levers, maybe the others, two big levers, the DA and business. We can spend an hour, which we won't be allowed to talk about, the different parts of business and what we mean by that and so on and so forth. Those are two big levers here. There are some other levers, I'm sure, within the ANC, maybe, but I'm tired of this game of within the ANC there are good people. You know, we've played this game. There is the international pressure, not the way I think AfriForum, what they're doing is a bit crazy from what I can see, but there is something there to think about carefully. There is civil society. There are professional bodies. If the professional lawyers stood up and agreed with our recommendations, let's say they're right, okay? If they stood up and said, you're right, we back, you know, a review of the NPA. We call on the president to give us the NPA access to the Zondo Commission stuff. They're all quiet. Everybody's quiescent. They're collaborating. They're quiet. Appeasement comes to work, to mind. So it's how do we get the society to kind of step out of its where we are now. There's a big issue coming up. Let me just raise it quickly. The local government elections. Now, I live in Johannesburg. The DA is weak in Johannesburg. One of the reasons is that professional business classes sort of gave up on the DA. Boring, not interesting, not black enough, not this, not that, not the next thing. They didn't say, which you would in any other country, my gosh, how are we going to build the next government of this country or this city? Never. I'll leave you with that thought before I lose my job.
Terrifying thought. Cookie, are you saying you want to say something? 100%. Let me get that mic to you. Just while we absorb that terrifying thought.
I mean, it's interesting you talk of Milei in Argentina, but the same happened in Greece with Mitsotakis taking, and even Modi, when he became president, in his first action, reputedly, he said when he took over from Singh, he constituted a smaller cabinet and gave each of them a few days to come and present to him what they were going to do in a PowerPoint presentation and held them accountable to that. Okay, so the leadership is, but the problem with us is both in Argentina, in Greece, and in the other countries in Europe now, are just the voter base that want to change. So in our case, there has been a move, but it's the voter base that also needs to be educated. Now, is the big problem that we face not ideological? That the ANC believes in central planning. And we know that doesn't work. So is the problem not of the DA and the GNU not to continuously hammer on that? Because they keep on acting on the same with the budget now. What effectively are you doing? You're taking money away from the private sector via a tax hike, and you're giving it to government instead of doing it the other way around. Isn't that the message that opposition must constantly hammer, that your ideology doesn't work? That's why we're not growing.
Russell wants to add to that as well. Sorry, we'll get that to you there.
Cocky, that's part of the issue, because everything that we've been talking about, the whole 3 days and including now, has been change basically via the ballot box. Fortunately, we're not talking about change via a revolution or taking up arms or something stupid like that. So, and the only reason that we are, and I think we're in a better situation now than what we were a little while ago, because what was the situation a little while ago? Well, you still had an ANC majority, and if you still had an ANC majority now, then nothing will change. The only reason things are but changing, and guys, they are changing, is because through the ballot box, we've got a party like the DA coming through, and we just have to hope and make sure, not just hope, make sure via voting that the DA continues to grow. Because, guys, that's the only way that things change at the end of the day. The only we should be grateful for the GNU, because what's the alternative? The alternatives we've been hearing about are still an ANC majority, which means there is no change. So we should just get off our collective asses and get people to go to these elections and vote. Because that's, as long as we're not going to devolve into a revolution. And guys, that's the end. as long as we do it through the ballot box, there is a hope of change. And in business, every business person must actually wake up every morning and say, like they're doing right now, like we've been doing for the last 20 years, guys. We get up in the morning and say, we are going to succeed today. In fact, we're going to flourish today despite government. Not because of government, because government's useless. They're corrupt, they're useless, they're incompetent. We're going to survive and flourish today despite government. And carry on what we are doing. And there are lots of centers of excellence within South Africa. Take some of our educational institutions. We've still basically got universities that work. Take our medical fraternity. It works. It's fantastic. We've still got a judiciary. We've still got a fairly free press. We've still got a great business sector, despite government.
And final word to you.
Well, I'm up for a conversation on a different platform on how to think harder and deeper about what business can do, what in terms of the DA and its general role in society. I'm a bit constrained, yeah. So I'm absolutely in favor of that. And I think there's a lot to think about. And Johannesburg is the key moment. I've got enough time now, and Johannesburg collapsing as it is just, it is the window to the world. It is the heart of business, and that really matters. So I think that I am in favor of the GNU. It is a better, I agree with Russell, we're in a much better situation than we were before the 2024 election. But we've got to realize that potential as much as we possibly can within limits, you know, with realism. But there are future elections coming fast and furious, and there's a lot to strategize on and to think about. And unless we all get in the game, we're not going to deliver the potential, and we will continue to slide. So let me end it there.
And I think it's get in the game from a voting perspective as well. So on that note, Anne Bernstein, ladies and gentlemen, Centre. Anne Bernstein from the Centre for Development and Enterprise, thanks so much for joining us today.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here, and get to shop more here, and do more here, and enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies, and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Downings is South Africa's leading marquee infrastructure company, proudly celebrating 25 years of excellence, renowned for creativity, innovation, and unmatched technical expertise. Our event marquees and semi-permanent structures elevate any project with style and sophistication. Whether it's a corporate event or a commercial project, we tailor every structure to meet your needs with world-class precision. Visit downings.co.za to consult with our expert team. Downings, your trusted marquee specialists nationwide.